This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Podbay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a crispy and crunchy 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Shane? Can you feel it?
Oh yeah, Lou. I can definitely feel it.
And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. Hey, this is Lou, and I am joined by a special guest tonight. We have Shane from Liberty Under Attack. And go ahead and give your contact websites and all that other stuff where people can find you.
Definitely. The website is libertyunderattack.com, and I actually do a radio show as well, LUA Radio, or live Thursday and Sundays at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time at fprnradio.com. So that's a short and sweet.
Nice. And you have an ongoing series going, and I believe this is on your LUA website. The Ongoing Adventures in Higher Indoctrination, or something like that. What's the proper name of it?
So it's titled Adventures in Illinois Higher Education. In this series, I'm a junior right now. I just got to Illinois State University. I was at a community college for a couple of years, second semester at a university. And in this series, we're all pretty well aware that high-level indoctrination is essentially a leftist institution. But what I try to do in this series is provide a libertarian perspective from inside these institutions, and provide some transparency as well. And one thing I've kind of learned, Lou, is it's a lot more blatant than I would have ever expected. I mean, open advocacy for communism, all of that good stuff. So it's been a really enlightening experience, to say the least.
I imagine it has been. My college days may be before you were born, or when you were just a little Hosenscheisse running around in diapers. It's been a long time since I was in college. I think I started in, what was it, maybe 1993, possibly early 94. January 94, I think it was, I started, roughly.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was probably almost two.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it was certainly on the lefty spectrum in many regards, but it wasn't as blatant as what you're talking about. And I started off at a local community college where people were just there to get their prerequisites. And although it was a little bit of the stereotypical college experience that you might expect, as far as people getting together and having their little groups and discussions and things like that, it wasn't really, really, really super blatant, I guess. It wasn't until I got over to Eastern Michigan University, where I did a couple years, I'm proud to call myself a dropout from there, that I really started seeing more of the advocacy and the lefty lifestyle of college. But I don't think it was anywhere near as blatant as you've described it, and just from what I hear from people, I would hate to be a college student today, especially at my age.
And I guess my experience was actually a little different. It was actually a lot worse at the community college. And I figured, as with progressivism or regressivism, I figured it would get progressively worse. But I guess now that I'm taking more classes suited to my field, it's actually not as blatant. I mean, the textbooks obviously have the anti-capitalist undertones and things of that nature. But the community college was a lot worse.
What is your major? Please tell me that it's not business administration or economics.
No. I started out. I wanted to do an economics degree, and this is before I started looking into the Austrian school. I just found it interesting, but you got to take financial accounting, and that wasn't something that I could do. And then I switched to business administration, and then it's pretty much the same class line, and I can't do math. I'm majoring in journalism and minoring in philosophy. There's not a whole lot of stuff I could do with that. I mean, I chose it because it's the easiest way, the easiest path that I can choose to get through, and I just need a degree and hopefully do some public relations stuff, and probably won't use it too much, but That's where I'm at.
Okay, so you're basically looking for a 4-year receipt, is what you're saying.
Yes, the magic piece, the 4-year magic piece of paper.
You know. Okay, so almost like you need a magic parchment because that makes everything happen and stuff.
Yes. So,
and how old are you again? Because you are a young guy.
I'm 24. I am just a junior in college, but I started a little late, and I'm taking my time. I don't want to be overwhelmed, and I don't see really any reason to rush through as long as I get that piece of paper at some time.
Okay. And you're not planning on using your degree in journalism for actual being a journalist, because you don't really need a degree, because you could probably do your own journalism on your own.
Successful. Yeah, and with the journalism degree, I mean, the only way you can really, I guess, without just setting up your own alternative media website and doing advertisements or donation base or something like that, it's pretty much through the mainstream media outlets. And the last thing I would ever want to do is go write for one of those propaganda machines. It's easiest way through, and it's just stipulation that I have to get my degree. The easiest path through.
Okay, yeah, because if you do an article or do a short news package explaining how government is doing something wrong, yeah, mainstream media is probably not going to pick that up. Probably not going to be one of the things that they jump at.
No, and unless it's something like where you're not, like the Snowden thing, I can't remember the journalist now,
Glenn Greenwald.
Yes, like there's very rare circumstances like when something like that will come up where, you know, I would have loved to do the journalism with Snowden. That would have been fantastic, but those opportunities are so rare, and pretty much you've got a toe and you've got to say, well, the government's making a mistake. You can't say like, you know, this institution is terrible, let's abolish it. you can't really do that.
Yeah, I think you can point out the fact that it's doing absolutely horrible things and that it's a horrible agency, because the NSA has essentially been just like most of the different spy agencies has mostly been directed inward. I mean, granted, they do foreign surveillance, but most of these intelligence agencies, and the FBI would probably be a prime example of it, they are actually domestic spy agencies, and they point the guns inward, basically. Mm-hmm. And that is their purpose. It's like the Truth in Advertising, in the name of the Stasi, the East German secret police, Ministerium für Staatssicherheit, Ministry for State Security. It's, yeah. And it just lets you know what it is. So it's like when you hear Department of Homeland Security, the current sister agency. Yeah, pretty much the same thing. But when it comes to situations like that, it's the journalists. It seems like that they're allowed to point out the horrible actions, the horrible behaviors, and the only recourse that they're allowed to suggest is more reforms.
Yes, that is, yeah, that is very true. And when it came to, I guess, the surveillance in general, I mean, it's been reform after reform after reform. When are people going to realize that, you can't reel this in. You definitely cannot reel it in.
Right, and Lawrence Reed, he has a nice little quote about reforms. He says, the constant need for reform is an admission that the state has got it wrong the first 50 times.
Yeah.
Because I think about this. One of the things that I point out, that police as we know them today in America, meaning NYPD, LAPD, and all the other, even the small town local police departments like in your hometown, those type of police agencies, those type of police departments have only existed since about the mid-1800s. So you didn't have police departments like the NYPD back in 1804 or 1797.
That's very true. Yeah, yeah. So Roger Roots wrote a. Roger Roots. I want to step in on this one because Roger Roots wrote a really good white paper. He is he's a minarchist, but it's called Our Cops Constitutional, and it was published in the Seton Hall Law Journal in like 2002, and. What he kind of explained was the history of it, and yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, the police that we've grown to despise today haven't been around for that long, definitely. And I definitely recommend that white paper.
Yeah, and what they actually are, you know, it's they've only been doing this for a little while. So what you see today is the result of a little bit over 150 years of police reforms.
Yeah. So yeah, that's definitely true.
They've been reforming it for about 150 years, and this is as good as it gets. And there's a book, it's called Gangs of New York, and it's what the movie was based upon, except the book is not a novel, it's an actual book outlining what the police were like in New York City at that time frame. So it's it's similar I guess to that white paper as far as explaining what was happening and what the police were doing. So going back to Glenn Greenwald, every once in a while he's able to really get a good swing. It's kind of like big time wrestling. The swings are really ferocious, but they don't really hit that hard. It's kind of like they stomp their foot on the mat of the ring, mm-hmm. to make the loud noise that you think that the other person got hit hard. Or you think that the government got hit hard. So, all they do is they point out, oh, yeah, this is horrible, and that's why we need to reform it. Or some of these many states to just say, and that's why we need to keep government limited. But they never say how they're going to keep it limited or how they're going to get it limited in the first place.
Yeah, and then the issue as well, like, what Snowden released was obviously really, really, I guess it was important. For some of us, we knew that sort of thing was going on, but the sensationalism in the media that it caused was really good. But obviously, people kind of have short attention spans nowadays. I mean, they've kind of forgotten with the Sideshow Circus that's in town now. The first of their events happened on Monday. People kind of forgot what happened in 2012, and that's 4 years. That's not bad either. But I mean, it's just you get a couple weeks ahead, and they forget what was in the news cycle a couple weeks ago. So that's another issue. It was big for a little while, and then it just kind of it died down, and now people don't really care. It's just kind of something they've accepted. You know, I mean, yeah, the government's spying on us. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what's worse. I don't know if it's the ones that say it's for our safety, it's for our own good, or they're not using that for bad, or the ones that say, you know, just like, okay, whatever.
Well, yeah, they're doing it to protect us from the Muslims, Lou. Oh.
We'll be back.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Are you tired of stinky socialists trying to take over America?
And are you also tired of theorists talking about the free market as a cure-all for every problem with no firsthand experience of how the market actually works?
Well, the Truth, Justice, American Way app gives you wall-to-wall shows by hosts who not only understand the market, but tell you how they make money in a variety of patriotic endeavors.
The Truth, Justice, American Way app for Android is 24/7 streaming audio content on the topics of finance, liberty, self-defense, and technology.
All the hosts are all American Americans from all over America.
And the app is made in Wyoming, the cowboy state.
Because you should buy American, even with free Android apps.
Truth, Justice, American Way. Useful information, compelling personalities, and superior American audio quality.
Go on the Google Play Store or the Amazon App Store and search Truth, Justice, American Way.
God bless each and every one of you, and God bless America.
This is Warren. I'm joined by Shane from Liberty Under Attack. He's our special guest tonight. He is our sit-in fiend or extra fiend, whatever. But anyhow, welcome to the show, Shane. I've been on your show a couple times. I've always enjoyed it, and it's a great opportunity to get you back here. I'm real happy to have you on the show. So you were talking about how you're a journalism student, and it's mostly for a communications, public relations type future. You had mentioned that you see the anti-capitalist and obviously probably pro-socialist viewpoint as far as like economics and stuff goes. Tell us a little bit about that. And you had mentioned that it's very blatant, not even subtle undertones, just very blatant.
Yeah. So at the community college I was at, and this was the first instance that I really saw. And obviously, I mean, you could guess it was sociology. So she wasn't an economist by any stretch of the imagination. But yeah, she would like, and this was I think the second article I wrote in the series, and it was the reason I decided to actually kind of continue it, because it wasn't supposed to be a series, but yeah, she said that she loves the idea of communism, and then she explained it to, like, I mean, these are college students, so they're like, you know, 18 to 20 years old in that range, and she explained it in the way of like the way that a 5-year-old could understand, like, oh, if I have a piece of pie, I would cut all the slices equally, and you'd all get a piece. Doesn't that just sound great, kids? And no one really said anything. I was just sitting in class like, really, really. So that was the most blatant example. And then in the other class I was taking, American Government and Politics, obviously that this was another blatant one. He said that the best economic system is one of which there's one that has that's a perfect blend of communism and capitalism. And if anyone's ever read Mises' Human Action, you know that's not possible. Either have a free market or you have a production czar or a group of production czars.
Central Planning Committee.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, so was there a justification for the mix of unicorns and mermaids? I mean, communism and capitalism.
No, and again, this guy was like a political science professor, so I'm sure he took some introductory economics classes, but he wasn't an economist either. Like, I wish he would have tried to like expound upon his reasoning for that, but no, it's just the moderate position. He was like, you know, there's some good things about the free market, but then there are also some good things about communism. You know, like caring for the poor and social security and things like that. So he's like, we need to take the good from each and then just combine those into this perfect economic system, which that wasn't as bad, and like at that point I was already kind of used to it, but it was definitely a point worth noting, because that's kind of the mindset of a lot of these professors, I think.
Do you think there's any intellectual backing behind it? Do you think they heard something and they said, hey, wow, this sounds kind of cool, maybe this is the way to do it? Or do you think that they actually broke down how it would work and looked at the mechanics of these things and, I don't know, maybe contemplated economic calculation and if it was even possible to have such a knowledge that would be required to be able to forecast these conditions and, I mean, things like that? Do you think they did any of that, or do you think they just said, hey, that sounds kind of cool, let's roll?
Well, I think it was a combination of obviously getting their higher level indoctrination degree themselves, since that's, even if it's worse now than when you were in there, Lou, that it's still had that in there, it's just gotten more aggressive now. So it obviously was influenced by their upbringing in that institution, but I also think it's had a little bit to do with obviously like the CNN, the Communist News Network, and MSNBC and outlets like that. You know, Hillary Clinton said this, or this economic expert said this, and you know, it sounds pretty good. You know, care for the poor, and I get to own my house, or whatever the reasoning is. But yeah, there's no way they actually contemplated it, or they would have actual explanations, not just make a statement without any backing whatsoever.
Yeah, one of the things that brought me to where I am today philosophically, and I still do this, and I still wind up changing ideas on different things as I come across new information. But one of the things that I really had to do was I had to ask myself questions. I had to be honest with the answers if I wanted to be consistent in my beliefs, meaning 2 + 2 always had to equal 4, except for when my candidate said that it equaled 5, because, you know, I don't want my candidate to look bad. So figuring stuff out, figuring out how it actually works and not how I want it to work, because that's what a lot of people do. If you look at the hardcore constitutionalists, they have this love for the Constitution, and they talk about all the things that it does that it doesn't actually do, and they see the world as they envision it to be, not how it actually is. And sure, We'll pick this up when we come back.
Listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends Radio Show. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgoristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agorist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, go with AgoristHosting.com.
Freedom Fiends. Worms. Worms. This is Lou, and I'm joined by our special guest for the night, Shane from Liberty Under Attack. And we're talking about his adventures in higher learning, his adventures in the Illinois indoctrination centers, and all the fun stuff that goes with that. So last segment, we were talking about your adventures in Marxism 101, uh-huh. also known as sociology class. And when I think back to my time at the community college, there was a sociology course that I took, and that's why I call it Marxism 101. The instructor's name was Jane something or other. I can't remember her last name, but oh gosh, she was a screechy socialist, and she was just the modern day SJWs are kind of tame compared to her, I think.
Really? That's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, at that time, all those years ago, to hear that basically white males are the problem with everything in the whole wide world and greed and everything else, and oh my God, she was nuts. And what was really bad was I just moved back from Germany, so I lived in Germany. I was speaking very good German at the time, and I even had a bit of a German accent when I first got back, and here she is trying to tell me how to pronounce words in German. I mean, that's how arrogant she was. And I'm not trying to do the appeal to authority, like, you know, hey, I speak German, you know, don't tell me how to do this, or I'm from Germany, you know. It's so she was just, yeah, but oh, I tell you what, the arguments that she and I used to get into. But the one thing that I can give her credit for is she was completely fair in the grading, because she gave points for class participation, and I always maxed out on that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I noticed I had a really hard time because it was physically painful, like, for me to go to that class. And I didn't because it just depends. Whenever I go into a class, it kind of determines whether or not I'm going to argue with the teacher or not. And from like the first week in that class is kind of when I determined that. And I just heard everyone else talk, and I said, yeah, this is kind of pointless. But she wasn't terrible, like, in the sense of arrogance, because no one challenged her. I could have, but. I don't participate a whole lot. I go there to write the AIG series and to get the magic piece of paper, and that's pretty much it. Except for I guess there was one circumstance. It was in my speech class the semester before. It was the first article I wrote for this series, and I did my speech in front of like 20 mindless millennials, and it was titled "The Communist Takeover of America." So like I went through like the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto, and you should have just seen their eyes glaze over. Like, some of them glazed over, and some of them were just extremely surprised. But the woman that followed me, her speech was just like, and this is why I started the series. She was proposing mandatory breathalyzers in vehicles to prevent drunk driving, and I saw an issue with that, Lou.
Get out of here! Get out of here! How could you have an issue with that for the safetiness?
Oh, well, how could you not? You know that can't go with that.
So what was her argument, and what was your objection to her argument?
Well, her argument was that, like, she went through, like, you know, the normal statistics, the ones you hear, like, you know, the cop advertisements you see, like, you drive drunk, you're going to jail. She pretty much just recited, like, you know, the typical arguments, like how many drunk driving accidents there are a year, and how many people die. And then she said, this is why I proposed this. It's like, well, you know, there could be other options rather than, you know, the use of force or coercion. You know, there's better ways to do things.
You know, it's really amazing when you hear about all the deaths that happen from a particular thing, and then when you find out just how small that number of deaths is in the big picture and compared to all these other things that nobody's really complaining about. It's, you know, it's like when people make the argument about gun violence when actually they should be talking about violence, not just gun violence, but all violence. Mm-hmm. And you would find that guns are actually used in a pretty small percentage of the violence.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely, definitely. And I mean, you look at other places where guns are banned or more heavily regulated than they are here in the United States. I mean, if someone has that desire to kill, they're going to find a way. I mean, I'm sure you've heard of the knives, the mass stabbings in different countries. Yeah. I mean, if someone has that insane of a mind and then they want to do it, they're going to find a way. They're going to find a way, and whatever tool they use, they're going to find a tool to use. Unfortunately.
Yeah, well, it's like the serial killer mentality. Whatever it is that makes a serial killer tick, you can make being a serial killer against the law, and they're not really going to respond too positively to that law. They're going to kind of like ignore it and go be serial killers. So yeah. This belief that especially with as much immediate or recent history that we have showing that laws do not solve any problems at all. I can't believe that people still go back to this. I mean, it's almost like the old wives' tale about toads causing warts.
I was told that as a kid, but you're exactly right. That I mean, and this is kind of something the Second Amendment folks use a lot, but I mean they're called criminals because they don't follow the laws. So when you pass laws, it only further restricts those that are trying not to get tossed in a cage. So that's kind of been evident over history. So
or those that equate being obedient with doing the right thing.
True. Yeah. Yeah. Legality does not equal morality.
Oh, no, especially when you look at the things that have been legal and illegal. And as a matter of fact, I had this conversation today with one of my coworkers, and he's very status. He's a retired Marine. And we were talking about the war on drugs. And I think the whole conversation came up over a police chief talking about black-on-black crime and all sorts of stuff. And I explained to him, I said, well, you know what? When you have a place that's a majority population black, like take Detroit, for example. I believe Detroit is 93% black and the other 7% is everything else. So an argument that could be made for the number of people being – or the fact that 97% of the people in Detroit being arrested are black, that's not racism. That's who lives there. It's black folks. So by the same token, 97% of the crime victims, you would also expect to be black, and you would also expect 97% of the perpetrators to be black. I give or take a percent or two. Just like where I am, which is, I think it's about 97% white up here and 3% other. Yeah, the white on white crime is epidemic levels here. It's like 97%.
Yeah.
So I when you start looking at things like that, but anyway, so this cop is talking about people being shot and everything, and he says, you know, these people, these protesters, they could tell you the last three people that were killed by cops, but they can't tell you the last three people that were killed by people in their community. You know, the gangbangers don't advertise themselves as serving and protecting the public. And
yeah.
they don't charge the public for that protection at the threat of a barrel of a gun. But more importantly, what I pointed out was that by persecuting or prosecuting the war on drugs, by just following orders and doing all these other things, they are making a less safe environment for the people of Milwaukee. And that's where this particular city was. So because the prohibitions, create the illicit markets, yada, 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 just like it happened with the prohibition of alcohol back in the early 20th century, just like it did with the blockades during the War of Northern Aggression. It created illicit markets where regular consumer goods were smuggled and regular consumer goods were killed over because of the artificially high profitability, just like in the late 1700s when the French government banned imported lace and the British government banned imported wool as far as protectionist measures go. People still smuggled that stuff in there, and it created the illicit markets. It created violence. So it's not just a matter of being drugs or alcohol and the mind-altering portion of it.
I remember I was one of my co-hosts on the show is from Wisconsin, and he told me, like, yeah, margarine needs to be illegal here because, you know, they do a lot with cheese. Luckily that's been gone for a few years, but yeah, just imagine that there's a black market for margarine, and that just shows you how ludicrous some of these prohibitions really are.
And if there is a demand for margarine, which I can't see why there would be, but if there was a demand for margarine over, let's say, regular butter, then you would have the illicit market, and you would have everything that goes along with it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. Luckily, margarine's a little, I guess, not as dangerous as, like, I don't know, cocaine or something. Thankfully, but I don't think anyone died over that. But yeah, still pretty atrocious.
Well, I think margarine is ultimately just a couple molecules away from being plastic, but the long-term danger is really bad. Plus, I prefer real butter. But anyway, my coworker, this retired Marine, says he gave the chorus to the Status theme song. Well, it's the law.
Mm-hmm.
To which I have to respond, okay, who cares? All right, it's illegal. So what? When you say that it's the law, that's not an argument. That's just an appeal to authority. That's just an appeal to obedience to government. And yeah, ultimately, what you have to look at is, what do these arbitrary declarations of idiot politicians do? Do they create an illicit market which creates a dangerous environment? If you're concerned about police safety, then, you know, let's look at the most dangerous times in history for police officers. I think there was a year in Prohibition. I can't remember exactly what year it was, but there were 300 cops killed, and it was because of the prohibition of alcohol. And then after Prohibition was ended, the murder rate for both cops and for civilians dropped like a rock. The crime rates massively dropped.
Yeah.
So you can say it's the law, and say, which means you better be obedient to government in this free country of ours, America. Or, you know, you can say, you know what, this is a really idiotic policy, and this whole obedience thing is nonsense, and this stuff needs to go.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I definitely agree, and not to the tax and regulate thing either. I know some people are for that, but you know, the money that they get from those taxes, they're going to be used for other terrible things that the state does. So I don't know.
Yeah, when I hear the argument for legalized tax and regulate, I'm like, yes, no, no. We'll be back. Freedom Fiends.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Ugh, I'm so sick of looking at Steve's wedding pics, and I'm all out of passive-aggressive comments. What else am I supposed to do at work all day?
Sick of stalking your ex on Facebook?
Yeah!
Are you all out of cute cats and autocorrect mishaps to lolat?
Duh!
Freedom Fiends to the rescue! The Fiends now have a blog. Read all about the latest tyranny today. Dream about lip pair. Laugh while Western civilization collapses. Just click on the cat icon to the right of freedomfiends.com. Freedom Fiends blog. Read it!
Worms, freedom fiends. Hey, this is Lou, and I am joined by our special guest for the night, Shane, from Liberty Under Attack. Yeah.
It's good to be with you, Lou.
Yeah, hey, it's great to have you here. Like I mentioned before, I've been on your show a couple times. I always enjoyed it. I always had a pleasure hanging out with you at Liberty Fest. So we are going to talk a little bit about the different festivals coming up. But We were talking in the break about your adventures in higher indoctrination, and one of the things that you mentioned, and this is something that I've noticed, is that the higher education system actually destroys critical thinking skills. And before I let you run off on that one, one of the things for me with my college experience, one of the few things that I learned in college that was really valuable, one of the things I learned in school period was like scientific method and searching for the ultimate answer. And I learned this in a behavioral biology course that I took. And I don't know, maybe the guy was bootlegging information to us. But I really learned about critical thinking and not just going with, well, hey, this sounds good to me, you know, let's run with it. So what were your experiences as far as the critical thinking skills being destroyed?
So obviously that's just not higher level indoctrination. Obviously that's kind of bred into children at a very early age, just through public schooling. But in college specifically, this is when college is supposed to be like this intellectual experience. You know, where all different opinions and discussions are allowed. And that, unfortunately, that's not really true. I guess one example that comes to mind specifically, and this is one of the few times I actually decided to, I guess, kind of debate a professor, and it was from, I had to, like, the constitutionalist standpoint that I took was radical enough, but it was in regards to Obergefell versus Hodges, which was the Supreme Court decision that legalized gay marriage, and I just kind of just casually brought up, well, doesn't seem kind of odd to you, sir, that a latter amendment can supersede or violate a former one, which should be the 14th violating the 10th, I was hoping that would get like a discussion started, like beyond what was typically in that class. And he just said, well, that's one interpretation, and moved on. I also think as well, I am a follower of the Trivium method. I had Nick Hazelton, who's a co-host on The Fiends, on to discuss that. And I kind of feel that that's kind of being turned on its head. You're given this information, they present it to you as fact, and you haven't looked at all sides of it, and you just kind of accept it because the appeal to authority that was mentioned earlier, and you can definitely see that whether it's people that are still in college or just people that are older, their reasoning skills and their ability to critically think and look at situations rationally, it's kind of gone. And I think that's kind of evident when you look at the situation that we find ourselves in.
Yeah, it's the preview of idiocracy, or idiocracy is a preview of the future. And when you look at the reasoning skills of the common person today, it's really not a whole lot different from half of the cast of Idiocracy.
Yeah, that's true, and I've tried to point out like just something basic like pointing out a logical fallacy, and you point that out, and either they say, well, I don't care, or they just kind of I don't know, they don't really know what that is, which I think I am a philosophy minor, and they do teach you logic, but there's a whole other slew of issues with philosophy that I've found. So I guess there's some good in that in philosophy. Actually, that's why I chose it as a minor, was it's the only one that requires critical thinking. Now the critical thinking they want me to do is, I think, a little bit of a waste of time, very, very into nuance and minutia, but yeah.
Expand on that a little bit, because I did take a philosophy course way back when I was in college, and that's probably, oh God, over 20 years ago now. You're going to have to come back in the next hour and tell us about it then.
Cool, sounds good.
So, we are going to market. We're going to have the news break and second hour. We'll be right back.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. RATS is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. RATS was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolf. RATS is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download RATS free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. This is Lou, and I am joined by our special guest for the night, Shane from Liberty Under Attack.
Hey.
Welcome back. And go ahead and give your website again.
Yep, libertyunderattack.com, and you can find us live on FPRN Radio every Thursday and Sunday at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Come give us a listen. We certainly appreciate it.
All right, excellent. And for those of you that are just tuning in now, or if your stations are just picking it up, the first hour was very good, talking about his adventures in higher education and the series that has been spawned from that. And not that it was meant to be a series, but it's a series that writes itself.
Yeah, yep, it is. When you get these opportunities, it's almost too good to be true. So you just gotta do it.
Yeah, it's the fruit that used to be low hanging. Now it's just rolling around on the ground.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, it's a good way to put
pretty
it.
Much. Yeah. So anyway, before we went to break for the hour, you were talking about the problems with the philosophy classes, which are supposed to really promote critical thinking, but they don't really promote it so much at all. Go into that a little bit more.
Yeah, well, I mean, it does promote critical thinking, but I guess I'll start by saying I mentioned the trivia method previously, which is a tool to vet and acquire knowledge. So obviously, I'm not an epistemological anarchist, as they would call it in my philosophy class, or a nihilist, as it's more commonly known. So I believe that we can actually know things. Like, I know I'm sitting here on the Freedom Fiends with you, Lou, through Fiend Phone. I know we're doing that. Now, the class I'm in currently...
No, the Matrix is telling you that you're on the Freedom Fiends with me.
Yep. 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 There it is.
Go
ahead,
continue.
No, that's fine. But yeah, the class I'm in now is just an introduction to epistemology and metaphysics. And we'll read like 5 pages and we'll spend like 2 class periods talking about, like, just dissecting every single line and everything the author said. And so that's like 2.5 hours of talking about the same subject. So it gets a little boring. Like, I like philosophical discussions, but it doesn't challenge me at all. And this is just to try to answer the questions, well, can we know anything? Is there such a thing as justified true belief? And this is the most, it's kind of just what you did there, Lou. Like, the teacher will ask, how do you know you're sitting in a chair in your philosophy class right now? And, well, I know that, like, my kind of, just from my sensory perceptions. And I can see that I'm here. I can feel that I'm sitting in this chair. I'm hearing you talk. I'm sure that I'm actually here. Well, couldn't your sensory perceptions be wrong? Well, yeah, sure, but they're right.
You could be tripping on acid and hallucinating the whole thing.
Exactly. But yeah, it's like sleep deprivation, like drugs, like those are the only two things that really that could really throw off your sensory perception that much. Yeah, well, that too. So yeah, sure, sure, sure. I guess they could be wrong, but they're right the majority of the time. And it just keeps going on like that, just like layer by layer, and you got to continue justifying that same thing, and it's really really frustrating. And I think if they just had the students read like just section 1 of Mises' Human Action, I mean, yeah, it is kind of complex, but just like spend half of the semester reading it once and discussing it, and then read it again and discuss it for the second semester, and I think that we could just settle that and move on to other important issues of knowledge and things. And there's one other point I'd like to make, and it's something Daryl Becker pointed out last time we had him on, and these are subjects that have been discussed for thousands of years, almost just continuously throughout, if not significantly longer than thousands of years. And notice this, the only ones that discuss it for that long are those that get paid to do so. I think that kind of tells you something there. I mean, you don't hear, walking around campus, just hearing people question, am I walking around the quad right now? Am I at the university? Huh. Is this concrete under my feet? You don't hear that. So the only ones that really do that are the philosophy professors. So,
or the ones on mushrooms.
True.
So you mentioned the trivium method. For the folks out there that have never heard of it or don't know much about it, could you give a brief explanation on that?
Yeah, so it's grammar, logic, rhetoric, and grammar is just, if you start out with your axioms like existence exists, and you gather knowledge and just build up from that. So you build off of those axioms, which would be the logic, and then rhetoric is actually applying those to real life, what you think you know, and then you just verify that with more evidence and sensory perceptions and things of that nature. And that's probably a bad explanation of it. But we interviewed, as I said, Nick Hazelton on the subject. Then we had Daryl Becker on to discuss it even further. And if you're unfamiliar with the trivium method, go check out some of the work Daryl Becker has done on it. We have an archive on libertyunderattack.com, but he's a lot better at describing that than I am, to say the least.
I met him at Porkfest this year, and it was a real pleasure to finally meet him. I've known him from the interwebs for quite some time, and I always enjoyed interacting with him, so it was a real treat to meet him at Porkfest. And I wish I could have had more time to just sit down and trade thoughts and ideas with him, but anywho.
He's pretty incredible, yeah.
Yeah, well, and that's what podcasts are for, or maybe Skype or something like that, but anyhow. So, what would you say, how would you describe your interactions with a lot of the other students? Because with you being 24 years old, I'm imagining that most of the other students are probably in the 17 to 20 age category. That's how it was when I went to college.
Probably like 18 to 23. Probably 18 to 23. I don't know many 17-year-olds that graduate from high school. I mean, yeah, there are. I think they're kind of the exception, not the rule. But yeah, probably 18 to 23. And to be completely honest, I don't interact with classmates a lot. Short discussions or something like that. There've been a couple instances where I'll be sitting in class before class starts. I'll be sitting there reading Human Action, and someone's like, "That's a thick book. What are you reading?" And I'll kind of tell it to them, and they'll lose interest really quickly once I explain it to them. But I really don't interact much. Typically, yeah, when I'm there and I'm not in class, I typically just read, because it gives me a really good opportunity to just sit there and do so.
Okay, I was still sound asleep when I went to college, and let's see now, I would have been 23 when I started, 23 pushing 24, and I'd already been in the Army, got out of the Army, lived in Germany for a year and a half, and that's when I came back. But I noticed it was like a lot of younger folks in there. As a matter of fact, when they found out that I was over 21, it's like, "Dude, can you buy for us?" And it's like, "Oh God."
Yeah, and did you live on campus or?
No, I was going to a community college, and by the time I got to the university, yeah. I was beyond living in the dorms, or as I was still calling them, the barracks at the time. I was working at UPS and working in management there, so there's no way I'm going and living in the dorms with a bunch of punk kids. It just ain't gonna fly. Besides, I probably will party too hard, because I was still young enough to do it back then. But I noticed, like, my interactions with people, and there were a lot of people that were really charged up. They had that motivation, and they were inspired because, we're in college. We're learning all of this knowledge. We're going to drop mad scientists, and we're going to change the world once we get out of here and go out in the real world and find out that what it's really like. And I saw a lot of energy. I didn't see the Marxism like you were talking about, but I remember seeing my first protesters at Eastern Michigan, because they were running around with their little signs, and it was a Christian group, talk about how everybody's going to hell for this, that, and the other thing. It's all right, I guess I'm going to burn by this time.
I'd rather see that than, I think the kind of the reason I interact more is I hear them talk. and that kind of turns me off a little bit. And then also just the when Bernie was a big thing, I typically go and read in the quad, but whenever the Bernie thing was going on, I'd go find like an isolated corner in a building and I'd just like go there. So that kind of gives you an idea.
Yeah, go to the walkway between the boiler plant and the main building.
Yeah,
to get away from
evacuate.
Those now, what about the social justice warrior nonsense? Because that wasn't really that big when I was in college. I mean, it was a little big because it's always been a lefty thing, but it wasn't so pervasive. I see more of it now that I'm not in college than I did when I was in college. So what's going on with all that nonsense?
Well, luckily, I guess like we obviously most people have probably heard of the stuff going on, and I think it was Harvard and Yale, like the stuff that's been in the news where it's been really atrocious. And luckily that I haven't seen anything like that at Illinois State. But what I have seen since there haven't been a lot of stuff to write about. It hasn't been as blatant as before, and I'm not just going to rewrite and say, hey, some teachers are communists at higher level indoctrination. Like, people know that. I want something original.
Yeah, it's not even a headline.
No, it's not. Like, I had the one time where my sociology teacher came out as a communist, and I wrote about that, and then I can kind of move forward now. But since there's not a whole lot to write about, I've been looking into some of the organizations there on campus, and there are actually quite a few groups. Like, there was one last semester, which I unfortunately I didn't get a chance to go because it was during my night class, but it was like the rape culture, and they have presentations and groups like that, so like that there are meetings all the time. So I mean, it's not out there like protesting and pointing out white people and telling them that they're devil or anything like that, but they kind of organize in their safe spaces and in their meetings or in their presentations, and they just kind of go do it there. So I guess that's a good thing. I do want to go to one or two of those events this semester, and probably the first time I will just go there and just write stuff down. I might bring a recorder and record the meeting, but or not that like a presentation or something, because it's open to the public, so that's mm-hmm. that's legal. That's no wiretapping or anything. So that'll be the first time. And the second time, I do want to actually go talk to some of these people, but I want to have somebody there with me because I don't really trust these people that much. And if I'm going to bring a bunch of equipment with me, whether it's me that gets beat down or my equipment gets stolen or something, I don't necessarily want that to happen. So I want to have at least a witness there to videotape.
Yeah. Like I said, I didn't see a whole lot of the social justice warrior nonsense, but I could probably see the prelude to it, because I guess I mentioned the college campuses have always been full of lefties. And at least for quite some time. I had actually read an article not too long ago that said that prior to, I don't know, maybe the 50s or so, it was actually the right, the conservatives that had dominated the campuses. But anyway, mm-hmm. We'll be back.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. Cell 411 because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at GetCell411.com. That's GetCell411.com.
Freedom Fiends. And this is you, joined by Shane from Liberty Under Attack Radio Show. Welcome back, Worms. Shane. So, you had something else that you wanted to cover when we went to break, talking about some of your interactions with the SJWs, and you had posted an article to one of their mm-hmm. websites or groups or forums, whatever. How did that go over? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so the article, I guess I'll preface it by saying I used to, I like writing in-depth articles, and they would turn out to be like 8 pages, but then I realized that more people read them if they were shorter. So
I didn't read.
Yeah. Which is I do offer the spoken discourse version too, which is the audio version, because I did understand that they were long, but I kind of gone away from that now. But the article is titled obviously AIHE, Equality Does Not Equal Freedom, and the image I chose to use was a quote from Alexis de Tocqueville's, I think it was Democracy in America, quote: Americans are so enamored of equality that they would rather be equal in slavery than unequal in freedom. So I found one of these groups I mentioned before. I don't remember the names of them, because the acronym for LGBT now is like 13,000 or 14,000 letters. I've kind of forgotten what the actual group was called. But I posted this article there just to see what happened, and I thought like a firestorm would open up, and I guess fortunately or unfortunately, depending on your perspective, it didn't. There were like, I don't know, 5 to 10 likes on the article, which shows me that they didn't read it, because I was particularly harsh. They probably don't. I don't know. And even with the Tocqueville quote, I mean, that is kind of derisive, isn't it? They'd rather be equal in slavery than unequal in freedom. But again, I think this kind of goes back to the inability to critically think. They probably thought I was like an ally or something. So I don't know. It wasn't what I expected. But I think I'm going to start poking them a little bit more now with some of the articles I wrote previously, just to kind of see what happens.
Yeah, the LGBT, it's got so many consonants in a row now that it looks like an Estonian word.
Yeah.
Or Russian or something like that. All those consonants in a row, I don't even know what it is. And matter of fact, when I hear it put out in like the full wording, it's like, what is half of that? And so anyhow,
yeah.
But going off on a little side note here, I've read some excerpts from Democracy in America, and this is something that I'd really like to talk to Prof. CJ about. Looking at a lot of that and just the major statism, because America's always been a statist place. I really don't think that the whole liberty, leave me alone type thing was ever anywhere near as much as people envision it to have been.
Yeah.
I think America's always been pretty statist and pretty obedient. And I guess this history of freedom has always been a false history.
Yeah, I think you're right there. And I've heard, I'm still in contact with a couple of constitutionalists, because, I mean, it's mutually beneficial relationships and such. But I consistently hear, like, well, you know, everything was fine up until the Civil Rights Movement. Like, America was free.
And, or 1913. And
1913, too. But, I was telling them, this was kind of mind-blowing, because, like, this person, I'm not going to toss out it, I'm going to protect the guilty here, but he's like one of the only patriots I can stand. And he does commit a lot of logical fallacies, but he's the best one they have, at least from
he's
from,
the tallest midget in their circus, is what you're telling me.
Yes. Okay. And I mentioned the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto, and half of the planks have been here for 20 years since time you're talking about. He said, not all the planks of the Communist Manifesto were bad. And I sat there kind of in, like, he defended communism there. I was like, what?
Well, did I just hear you right? What do you expect?
Yeah, I know, but I don't know. It just wasn't necessarily what I expected from that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get a kick out of the folks that they're from Campaign for a Tiny Bit More Liberty, the group that Ron Paul started off, because they're diehard constitutionalists. They love the Constitution, and they love state nullification, and they say we need to decentralize. But what they fail to recognize is that it's not decentralization until power rests at the individual level. If power is at the state, county, or city level, that's not decentralization. The power is centralized above the individual, and the individual does not have the power to govern themselves. So just like there's no such thing as half free, you're not decentralized until there is no more central power, period. But
that's a good point.
Yeah, they love to talk about how the state of Wisconsin nullified the unconstitutional fugitive slave laws, and because they never read the magic parchment, they don't know that it's in Article 4. So, they're a joke. We'll be back.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists who think you need a government permission slip for everything? Everything you do is an A to B conversation, and the government should see their way out of it. Create true free markets by adopting the BIPCOT No Government License. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows use or modification of any product, service, or software except by governments or government agents. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Freedom Fiends. This is Lou, and I am joined by our special guest for the night, Shane of Liberty Under Attack. And go ahead and tell us about your direct action series, Shane, and the different topics that you cover on your show.
Yeah. So I think it's probably best to first preface it with so we have something called the Freedom Umbrella of Direct Action, which is essentially a value-free directory of the economic means solutions to assist individuals in finding freedom now without asking for permission. So we had this long list of things. This probably came up with like a year ago, and we had this long list of solutions on how to find freedom, and there were. Honestly, there was. It wasn't just me that did this. There were some of my had no idea what they were, and then other ones where I had this superficial understanding, to where there was no way I could actually utilize these strategies in my life. So what we decided to do was the direct action series, which essentially we took different items off of that list, which there are about 100 of them now, but the different sections are like philosophy, things like Cal Molyneux's Three Questions to Anarchy. Strategic withdrawal, so canceling the voter registration, which is something I've kind of pioneered myself. There's a tab on the website. I put together a PDF of, I actually went and searched out the legal citations for 39 states in this union, as the constitutionalists would call it, and I actually found the citations of how to cancel it. So if that's something you want to do, just go to the website, you can find that. Things like conscientious objection, section on homeschooling, which the Trivium method we mentioned previously, psychology and interpersonal relationships, free-range parenting, peaceful parenting, nonviolent communication, culture jamming, the meme hacks. The biggest one I remember recently was you remember the taxation and theft one where it actually was like trending on Google. That was fantastic. Yes. That's culture jamming. I really love that section on entrepreneurship, things like counter economics, Bitcoin, financial independence. Survivalism, which is a pretty self-explanatory topic. I guess to put it short, just a bunch of different ways on finding freedom now without asking for permission. Now, some of these are experimental. I haven't tested all of these, and neither have the couple people that helped put that together. But the direct action series, we took a look at a bunch of those different things, and we interviewed people such as like Brett Vinat from the School Sucks Project. We had Pete Sisko, who he's a perpetual traveler. He moves like country to country every like 90 days. All he has to his name is a suitcase, whatever can fit into a suitcase. We had on Jake DeSillis, who was financial independence, early retirement. Stephanie Murphy was on there. Lauren Rumpler, just a bunch of different people. Some more prominent in the libertarian and anarchist community, and then others who have utilized direct action to greatly increase their own personal freedom. So that was the direct action series, just interviewing those folks and trying to I guess just providing our listeners with the information necessary to where they can start making decisions on strategies and tactics without waiting every 4 years for a presidential election. They don't have to wait for Adam Kokesh to run in 2020. They can implement these things. They can implement these things tomorrow or as soon as possible, rather than waiting. So that was the direct action series, and also the Freedom Umbrella of Direct Action. And actually, there was one other thing that you wanted to discuss, and another thing on the Freedom Umbrella of Direct Action is freedom conferences and festivals. I know, Lou, you went to one this past weekend, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I went to Agora Fest, and incidentally, I met you at Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest last year, mm-hmm. and then, of course, this year. Agora Fest was a really good time. It's a bunch of folks from the I guess Minneapolis-St. Paul area. I think that's where most of them are from. But it was in western Wisconsin this year at, I believe the place is called Turtle Creek Glen. And it was a very beautiful location. I really enjoyed it. It reminded me a lot like Circle Pines, except bigger and in some regards a little bit more neatly kept. I don't know if I would say less forest, but I don't know. It seemed like there was a lot more open spaces where with the Circle Pines, you got the meadow where the main fire pit is, which is a fairly good size area, but not too big. And then you got the orchard, which is big, but it's not really open because it's obviously an orchard and there's apple trees all over the place. But yeah, it's really nice. And there's this stream that goes right through it. It's really beautiful. As a matter of fact, there's one little drop off in there it's not a waterfall, but I guess maybe by technical definition it could be, because I mean, it is a drop. It's maybe a foot and a half drop. But anyway, and what's really neat is you got these little bridges that you can walk across to get to the other side of the river. And there's a little separate camping area over there, which is kind of secluded. And it was just absolutely amazing. So yeah. I really enjoyed the location. They had this tavern with these skylights, so if you go in there during the daytime you can see it's illuminated by the sun, and of course they had lights in there. But and at one end they also had this fireplace. It's one of those fireplaces that I could walk in and like break dance in, because that's how much room there was in there. Yeah, and it was tall, it was wide. I was like, holy cow, this thing's amazing. But yeah, it's a real good time. And there were a number of presentations there. I didn't catch any of the presentations because I have a tendency to walk around just shoot the bull with people. But one that I remember was going on was talking about astronomy, so looking at different galaxies and things like that. And there were a bunch of different workshops. Matter of fact, during the astronomy thing, there were a bunch of electronics geeks that were putting together. They're making circuits and all this other stuff, and it's like, my God. And there were also folks that were playing with the model rockets, so putting the little motors in there and launching them, packing the parachutes and everything else. And there were a lot of kids involved in that. So you had adults and you had kids that were taking part in the rockets. And they were also flying drones around. As a matter of fact, I think there was one drone that was set up with a camera that I think they wanted to put that up above and film a rocket going up. But there's definitely a lot of interest in space travel and exploration there. That's one of the main themes. But because it is AgoraFest, one of the focuses is on the subject of agorism. And there's a little bit of agorism going on there. But this was their fourth year, and they're a little bit behind Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest as far as numbers go. But the one thing that I noticed was there were more people there this year than the year before. And probably more important, you had a lot more families there. Because last year, as far as people with kids, there was one guy who had his teenage kids there. And then there was another guy who had his, maybe a one-year-old, just going around in, carrying the baby around in one of those little backpacks that goes on the front. And this year his little girl's running around, on her own 2 feet. But yeah, there were a lot more kids there. So the 5 and 6 year old range, 12, 13, 9, like I said, just a lot of families. And the thing about the more families being there, and one of the guys had pointed this out, he says, this shows that it's not just a bunch of neck beards. It shows that it's more of a mainstream idea. Yeah. Such as the homeschooling. Homeschooling used to be the religious fanatics or the people that thought that public schools just weren't status enough and they wanted more constitution taught. And it's really catching on, and I really enjoy networking with those folks. And they're actually closer to me than Liberty Fest. It's a little bit more than half the distance to Liberty Fest for me. So nice. I will probably have some more involvement with them during the year.
Good deal. You know what I noticed? We're going to have to do a fourth edition of the Freedom Umbrella of Direct Action, because AgoraFest is not one of the festivals listed. I missed it. I just heard about it. I just heard about it recently. So yeah, it didn't get put on there. So I'll have to add an addendum to that or something. But yeah, I wanted to mention there's actually another another anarchy festival coming up. And I just found out a few days ago that I'm actually going to be attending. It's Anarchon. I mentioned Cal Molinet earlier, and he's from Liberate RV out there in Richmond, Virginia. And Anarchon is happening from October 7th to the 10th at the Cove Campground in Gore, Virginia. I've never been there, but I don't think I've ever been to Virginia, to be honest. But the property looks beautiful. It's about as much for a weekend as the Midwest Peace Liberty Fest was. I think it's about $50. There's a shooting range. Yeah, you can actually shoot guns there, which hopefully I'll be able to partake in. Obviously, speaking engagements and an Agora Marketplace, probably similar to Agora Fest. And if you get to go, you will get to hear my presentation on the Freedom Umbrella of Direct Action. I gave it the Midwest Peace Liberty Fest, but I'm going to refine it a little bit and give that presentation again there. I'm really, really looking forward to it. It's about 11 hours from me. But yeah, it'll be nice to actually go and meet some of those folks in Virginia, because I've met quite a few people from the Michigan area and folks at the Midwest Peace Liberty Fest. But for probably a year and a half now, I've had correspondence with these folks over a fascist book, and it'll be nice to go and meet some of those folks. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, and I do have to thank you for helping to promote the event, because you did play the radio commercial on your show on FPRN, and then also you had me on it as an interview the night before the fest was officially starting. I took you around to talk to some of the folks that were part of the setup crew, which was kind of neat that I could take my tablet and set up a hotspot and go around and talk to you on Skype.
That was pretty cool. Yeah. It was pretty clear either. No dropouts or anything.
And the amazing thing was I had forgotten to grab my phone and take it with me. So it was actually sitting on the countertop in my kitchen before I even went outside. So I was like 100 feet away from my phone, still with the hotspot.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Pretty incredible.
So technology is a wonderful thing. So you've been to two Liberty Fests. So what was your impression of the first one? Because you were still kind of new to liberty and anarchism and everything else at the time. So this was probably your first, if not real event, major event, correct?
It was definitely the first real event. And yeah, when I started LUA Radio, I had a run-in with the Sovereign Citizens. I don't know if Freedom Fiends listeners are familiar with them, but they're fun.
They're the sarcastic magic words people.
Yeah, you go in and say these magic words in court, or you fill out these magic documents, and if you don't go to prison, you're gonna get off of whatever case you got. So yeah, I had a run in with them, and they were constitutionalists. They were just yelling about it the completely wrong way.
What you gotta do is register yourself as a boat out of the Bahamas, and then fly your flag upside down without the fringe on it, and that way they can't touch you. That's like a spell of protection.
Yeah,
those guys.
Yeah, it is. Yep, that's them. Yeah, the gold fringe in court. Yeah, they're an interesting bunch.
All right, we'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
The Freedom Fiends now have a free app for your Android phone, tablet, phablet, or other chromed robot turd, available now from the Google Play Store, Amazon, and FreedomFiends.com. Lovingly handcrafted by head hamster Michael W. Dean, the artisanal Freedom Fiends radio app allows you to listen live, keep up with the podcast, chat directly with other fiends, get discounts on bigger buttons, brainwash yourself with a 24/7 random episode, and so much more. You know the Freedom Fiends is the best libertarian radio show in the world, but when the fiends aren't live, you can use the app to listen to LRN.FM from anywhere. The Freedom Fiends radio app is like having a virtual libertarian re-education camp in your pocket. It's your gateway to the exclusive, high-demand group that is the Freedom Fiends. Install the Freedom Fiends radio Android app today. It's free, and of course, it's covered by the BIPCOT no government license. Tell two friends, review it on Google Play and Amazon, prepare for the inevitable death of terrestrial radio, and get ready for LibPair with the Freedom Fiends radio app for Android. Worms. Worms.
Anyway, yeah, back to the networking and meeting up with other people. So, Liberty Fest, Midwest Peace of Liberty Fest, that was your first Liberty event. You didn't go to any meetups. You've been to like one or two meetups or something like that. So, yeah. Give me your first impression of getting to Liberty Fest, your first day or so, you know, in this new world of yours.
Yeah, so I only called myself an anarchist for probably three or four months before I went to the festival, and I already had an understanding of obviously like the two core principles, the non-aggression principle and self-ownership, so I already knew that, and I went there, and I actually took someone with me, and I left all my equipment in my car. I had everything like from my studio, and I had it in my car, and she was like, are you gonna lock your car? And I said, No, these people, they believe in non-aggression principle, and they believe in self-ownership. I'm not worried about it. And she came out as a socialist like 3 days before, because she went to other festivals, you know, like the dubstep festivals and stuff, where it's kind of a prominent thing. And I didn't really talk to her much. So she was used to that atmosphere, to where people make a lot of money from stealing stuff, unfortunately. But yeah, we got there, and she had a great time. I had a great time. But the first day, and I know right when I got there, you came up and talked to me. You're the only one I actually knew, because we messaged a few times on Facebook. But after a couple hours, I talked to like 15 or 20 people. I was kind of getting a lay of the land and figuring out the presentations, and had some great conversations. And obviously I didn't know there was any anarchy merch or anything like that yet. And I saw some, I remember Aaron LaRue, he had on, I think it was a quote by Larkin Rose. And I was like, oh, that was like the first piece of anarchist literature I read. And it was just great it was the first time I've actually been able to have these conversations in person. It's typically been over Skype or the radio show before that, but I was actually able to sit there and like face to face with people and actually talk about these ideas. And it really kind of reaffirmed what I already knew, that, you know, there are people out there, anarchists out there, and like this is definitely possible. This is definitely possible, and something I always say. I don't remember what the actual event was called, but constitutionalists always like to say that anarchy isn't possible. But they weren't even able to coordinate a picnic. They tried to set up a picnic out there in the West somewhere, and it went to complete crap within a couple of months with infighting and stuff. So, I mean, that puts one zero anarchists versus constitutionalists. Well, actually, a lot more than that. How many freedom festivals are there a year? I think the score is pretty settled.
Well, there's four for Liberty Fest, four for Agora Fest, and this will be the second Anarchon.
Yeah, exactly.
Pork Fest, which is kind of, I don't know, Minstatism Fest. Don't tread on me as much. I think that they just had 13, so this will be 14 this year if the Free State Project is still around. If it doesn't implode.
That's definitely incredible. It really is. But I guess one thing I've noticed from whether it was the radio show or through Freedom Festivals, I've actually formulated real friendships. And we don't live in the same state. Like Danny is one of my co-hosts. He's up there in a part of the Michigan Peace Liberty Coalition. Joe, Mike, other people I'm probably forgetting. Obviously you, and then. Jason, one of my other co-hosts, like he's been down riding with us in Southern Illinois at our property twice, and I'll be seeing him this week when we road trip down to Anarchon. You can actually build just real friendships. You can actually build real friendships. I mean, you meet people over the internet, and then you hang out once, and it's kind of solidified there. So I think that's really, really incredible.
Yeah, and something that you mentioned earlier that's really important, You can leave your stuff unattended. I don't advise doing that just because, but you don't have to worry about your stuff disappearing. And, new. And granted, people can say, yes, I'm an adherent to the NAP. I'm not going to steal your stuff. And maybe they will, because maybe they're full of crap. Maybe they're not really an anarchist. But what I've noticed is, like you just said, the connections that you get with these people, they're a lot deeper, it seems like.
Definitely.
Any final words?
I certainly agree. Nothing other than come tune into a broadcast of LUA Radio, libertyunderattack.com. You can find all that stuff there. Thanks so much for having me on The Fiends, Lou. It was a lot of fun talking with you, man.
Well, thanks for coming on. It was my pleasure. And for more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com.
Laissez-faire.
Worms.
Fair.